received many honors, including a Grammy Legend Award, a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, and a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Quincy Jones is survived by 7 children. He was 91 years old. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 74 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 67 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Spangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are tuned in. You're listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pilago. Before I go any further, I just want to thank everyone who made donations towards our most recent drive. We want to thank you so much for your listenership, for your constant support. It really does mean a lot, and it helps to keep this vehicle that we have in the District of Columbia for news, media, music, you name it, alive. So thank you so much for all of your support. I'm honored this afternoon to have my colleagues join me. We are going to be discussing changes to DC's Emergency Rental Assistance Program, but also an event that is coming up to bring more attention to the plight of DC residents who are having a tough time paying the rent. So let me welcome Andrea Chapman and Farah Fosse to the show.
Hey, Daniel. Happy to be here.
Yes, thank you. Happy to be here.
Do you all want to share your titles and just a little bit about yourselves? I always like to have folks share a little bit about themselves so folks know who they're listening to.
Great. My name is Farah Fosse. I'm the Community Development Director here at Empower DC. I'm sort of new to the Empower staff, but I've been a longtime member since 2005. I've been an Empower DC member, and over the years, I've worked off and on with Empower, particularly on housing campaigns. And I also have a background in tenant organizing. I've been doing tenant organizing in the district for almost 20 years. And, you know, was initially trained by Linda Leakes, one of Empower's founders.
Wonderful. Thank you. Andrea?
Hi, everyone. My name is Andrea. I am a community organizer at Empower DC. I work alongside Daniel and Farah on the housing team. And I am still, I have been with Empower DC since May of last year, which feels like not so long of a time, but I don't know. It just feels like a blur. I'm still pretty new to the organizing scene, to the housing scene in DC. Before joining Empower DC, I used to live in Madison, Wisconsin. I was connected to the YWCA out there doing a lot of work with youth, but happy to be back in the DMV and, you know, working alongside Daniel and Farah to address these housing issues, these longtime housing issues. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both. Thank you for the work that you're doing. As I mentioned, we are going to be talking about the changes that have happened to the Emergency Rental Assistance Program that helps district residents to pay their rents when they fall behind. I want to, before we get into the thick of it, encourage folks to give us a call, share your stories. If you received ERAP and it's been helpful, if you've had issues with ERAP, please give us a call. If you've had any issues just with displacement in general, because We're going to get into the what's really driving the need for ERAP and likely why these changes occurred as we get into the discussion here. But really encouraging folks to call in and share their stories. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. So, Farah, given your longtime work here in the district, can you just explain a little bit about what ERAP is, how it's helped folks over the years, just so we get a general understanding of what the program is?
Yeah, so the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, it helps low-income DC residents who are facing eviction or homelessness. And when we're talking about eviction, it'll help people to pay back rent, to pay late fees, and to pay court costs so that they can stay in their homes. It's specifically for folks who are low income, so people making under 40% of the area median income. So that's like around $60,000 a year. If you have a family of four, you'd need to be earning less than that to get ERAP. It also helps people who are exiting homelessness. Yeah, that's the basics. And, you know, it's been around for a long time, and I think we'll talk about this more, but during the pandemic, there was a lot of work done to really make sure that ERAP was widely accessible. The city had more funds to help people to stay in their homes and to help prevent homelessness. And so, tenants said what they needed in order to access ERAP, and advocates and attorneys really fought to make sure that the program was more accessible so that people could get it easily. And that was happening until recently.
Thank you, Farah. A very important program. Unfortunately, it's the only program. That's why so much attention has been put on it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that too. But Andrea, could you talk to us a little bit about, we started seeing some hints that something was going to happen, primarily around the budget process. We saw a drastic cut in the funding. But talk to us a little bit about, the environment, the storm that was brewing, that we were noticing, that affected where we are now with this program.
Yeah, so earlier this year, there were already many efforts underway by landlords to lobby at the with the DC Council to sort of put limits on access to ERAP and on the application process. One of the most telling written evidence of this is the AOBA report, which is the apartments and office conglomerate that lobbies at the council on housing policy. And in that report, they argued basically that the stays on ERAP should be limited. And when that did originally start coming up, Empower DC did take action, and a lot of news outlets did take action as well to sort of counter the lobbying, because a lot of the reasons landlords were giving to limit the stays were because people were committing fraud. And so NBC4 and Empower DC worked together to sort of counter those narratives and to push back against that by getting resident stories who had applied for ERAP, and to show that people are really facing challenges paying for rent, and that the struggles that were taking place during the pandemic continue. So this was happening from the top of the year onward, and now we're seeing those policies really being pushed into place, especially what we've been seeing in the last couple months.
And I'll just add on and say, as Andrea said, going back to the beginning of the year, there was this push, I don't think by landlords, because landlords actually in this around the budget, and we know that landlords actually benefit from ERAP. It helps them, as far as paying debt. But the city council, with the budget limitations and deciding on their priorities, really cut ERAP in the last budget. And that was, I think, as Andrew was saying, we saw some signs then or around then, right, about what was happening. So the DC fiscal year starts October 1st. So that means we're actually in the 2025 fiscal year right now. And in that budget that was passed, that went through the council last spring and then was passed in the early summer, the program was cut, was dramatically cut. So we now have less than half the funding. This year in 2025, October 1st, 2024 to the end of September 2025, than we did the previous years. So really limited funding in the ERAP program now. And yeah, and just to say too, currently they're not accepting applications, but once the city does start accepting applications, we're expecting them to run out of funds really quickly.
That's right. If I'm not mistaken, the current budget is, the fiscal 25 budget is just a little shy of $27 million, with the mayor funding ERAP at $20 million, and then the council finding some additional money to bring it to that nearly $27 million. But as Farah mentioned, you know, a drastic cut, a dramatic cut from where it was funded in the previous years. I was wondering if we should, I think it's important to talk more about who's been pushing this and the narrative that's being developed. I would like to get into the changes and what folks should know, because folks are waiting for that portal to open. We're all waiting to see what happens. But I think it is important to underscore, you know, the pressure that's been put on both on the mayor and the council to make these type of changes. So I'll just open it up to both of you, you know, to share what we've seen and heard that has, you know, brought us to the conclusion around what's really driving these changes.
Yeah, I think Andrea started talking about this, just this, you know, narrative around how ERAP's being used. And I think going, underscoring that, you know, landlords are saying that they're owed a lot of money. You know, they're saying, I think it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. We know that's because folks can't pay the rent, right? The rent in DC is very high. It has increased. I think I just saw a report that DC has had one of the fastest rent increases in the country, maybe the fastest over the last couple of years. And that's despite us having rent control, and in particular, which limits rents, right? But rents continue to rise much faster than people's incomes. So landlords have said they're facing this backlog in rent. And their complaint has been not exactly like basically how ERAP interacts with the eviction, the court eviction process, and saying that while, so Andrea mentioned this stay on eviction, right? So while you're waiting for ERAP, while you're waiting for your application to be approved or denied, and then while you're waiting for the funds to actually come through, in the last few years, what would happen is that the court would put a pause, also called a stay on your eviction, and wait, you know, because the city generally, the city almost always came through with the funding. But what landlords have said is, you know, this is slowing down evictions too much. But they really, both landlords and the city council and the mayor, like then just went much farther and had a lot of really inflammatory language that really blamed renters for the eviction crisis. And I think for all of us, we consider the eviction crisis people being displaced. That is a crisis. They started talking about this crisis of not being able to evict people fast enough. So they were saying, I have in front of me this news article where Chairman Mendelson, the chair of the DC Council, said DC has to stop strangling housing providers by preventing evictions. And so really created this narrative where housing providers are the victim, and also created this narrative of saying, you know, as Andrea said, like there's that tenants were creating fraud, that people were just using ERAP to slow down evictions or using ERAP to get out of paying or something like that, right? There's no evidence of that. And we also know that's like a historic trope, right? That's used all with all benefit programs over the years. You hear about, you know, poor people, particularly Black and brown people, as though they're scamming the system or something like that, when really there's both in DC and nationally, very little evidence of people committing fraud with benefits programs. And, you know, I think to me, it's kind of common sense, right? We know that people need these programs to stay in their housing. We know that people need these programs to, you you know, have food and have basic necessities. So that's, I think that's like the piece that is missing, right? Is, well, how do people pay the rent then?
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Farah. And Andrea, if you could share, I know you did some really good work in the budget season to kind of push back against that narrative that people were just gaming the system. They may not have said that overtly, you know, the people in power, but that was certainly what was taken away, right? That people are gaming the system. People are used to not paying the rent because of Stay DC, the federal funding that the district received when we were in COVID, right? At least in the deep throes of it. But you were able to work with some folks and actually were able to help with a news story that actually told a different story. If you could just talk a little bit about that, because I think it's important to push back against this false narrative.
Yeah, so earlier in the summer, that was actually some of the mayor's words, that folks were gaming the system. And so they were using ERAP as a slush fund instead of recognizing the actual need. And so we were actually able to work with some residents, a resident who had applied for ERAP and was able to subsequently avoid eviction. And she was several months behind and was able to use that to avoid eviction. And she said that she had lost her job. She had mentioned that she was unable to afford the rent. And so, and she also noted several of her neighbors who were going through the same situation. And even since then, I've spoken to other residents who have reported the same issues, especially residents who are applying for ERAP and have disabilities and are balancing medical costs and other costs that are continuing to rise, like food costs, in addition to paying for rent. And so we were able to show that, no, in fact, people aren't committing fraud, but in fact, people are really struggling and you aren't providing protections for people to be able to not have to turn to things like ERAP.
Yeah. And in the case of this person, this woman that you were able to get interviewed, it helped her, right? She was able to jump back. Then was,
yes, she was able to get back.
And, you know, was back to kind of normal, right? I mean, it's not easy, but it helped. It served its purpose. So I think that, you know, that's that was really important to show. And interview article, whatever we want to call it, actually also underscored that they were able to find gaming of the system. You know, DHS, the Department of Human Services, which is the program that where ERAP is housed, couldn't provide any real data to prove that the system was being gamed in any way. So important for folks to know when we talk about the rent, right? And how hard it is to get it paid. And yes, there are emergencies. Emergencies happen. And we certainly need to help people through those emergencies. Once again, folks, we are talking about the changes to, we're actually going to get into that piece of how the program has changed. We've talked about some of the forces that have pushed and changed this program. And we'll talk about some of these changes because it's important for folks who currently have applications in, who want to apply, to know what's really at play here, because it is going to be very difficult to apply and to avail yourself of these funds. The biggest issue kind of really being is that the funding is just not there. There's you know, such a small amount of funding now for that program, but nonetheless, folks should still try if possible. I do want to encourage folks, if you have a story to share, a success story, a woe story, you know, if the rising costs of housing and just the rising cost of everything in this city have affected you, have led to displacement, and you would like to share your story anonymously, however you'd like to do it, please feel free to give us a call. You can reach us at 202-588-0893. Once again, that's 202-588-0893. 588-0893 here at WPFW. If we could maybe get into, because we are developing some printed materials that we'll be distributing around the city to inform district tenants, renters, about these changes to ERAP and what they'll have to do. But Farah, Andrea, could you talk to us about what these changes are and what folks should know as we kind of embark into this new era of ERAP?
Well, I guess I can start with one of the more important pieces about the stay or that pause in an eviction case. So, whereas before, when you were applying and your application was pending, you had that automatic stay, that is no longer the case. So, they're no longer mandatory. A judge can choose to do it, but it's at their discretion. And now there is only one stay per eviction case that's allowed. The judge can decide to extend that stay, but they don't have to. So it really just takes away the power to have that pause to be able to get things together while your eviction, while your ERAP application is pending. Farah, I'll let you jump in on some of the other particulars, or we can bounce back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing that's important about that, the fact that Andrew was just saying that it's not mandatory means even if you have a pending application, it's really important that you show up to court and explain that. And if you don't have an attorney, which most tenants don't at landlord-tenant court, you're really going to have to be a good self-advocate, right? Like practice speaking up and saying, hey, I have a pending ERAP application. I'm working to get the funds to pay off this debt. Because it's not gonna, in the past, it was automatic, so you didn't have to do that work, but that's gonna be a big change. The other piece of the change is that you can't self-certify anymore. So I think that's the other big part, is that during the pandemic, you could really just say, I'm a resident in DC. I think that part is kind of obvious, because if they're evicting you from an apartment in DC, you clearly live there, but you're actually going to have to certify that now. I live here. This is how much I owe. But in particular, there's two points that you're really going to have to think about how you're going to show it. And that's your income. So showing that you earn less than that maximum amount. And again, that depends on your family size. But if you have, you know, four people in your household, four people living together, you'd have to show that you make under $61,880 a year. So that just gives you an idea. If you have more people in your family, you could earn a little more and still qualify. Less people, you know, you'd be good if you're under $60,000 or less. So you're going to have to show your earnings. I will say, you know, the program, they're pretty flexible on this. So just think about any way that you can document. You know, I know a lot of, if you get paid under the table, maybe you're showing, maybe you have someone write, you know, I pay Farah this much money every 2 weeks. Or you could show your, you know, your Cash App, or you could show, you know, if you have a pay stub, that's great. Or you could show unemployment or something like Social Security. So just thinking about how you can document that. And then the other big thing you need to document, and this is a big change, is showing that you've had an emergency. So, you know, really during the pandemic, we were considering, if you're facing eviction, that's an emergency, you would get ERAP, right? Now they're saying this is, and if you were familiar with this program before the pandemic, this is basically just going back to the old rules. So they said, you need to show that there was some sort of one-time event, some emergency that happened that made you unable to pay your full rent. But that now you can pay your rent on an ongoing basis. So that's a really big piece of it. So, you know, sometimes when we think about that, we might not be able to identify quickly, oh, there wasn't an emergency. But I think a lot of times you may have to just think about it a little more and think, were there any emergencies that happened to me during this time? Was there anything out of the norm? You know, did someone in my family pass and I had to take some days off of work? Or maybe I had a kid or a family member homesick and I missed work. Did I lose my job, but now I'm employed again, so I can pay? You know, maybe you had a car repair or something like that. So any of those things, you need to think about it and think about how you can show that. So that's going to be, I think, the biggest change, because it means that if you just can't pay the rent on an ongoing basis, you're likely not to qualify for UREP. I won't say that you can't. You should still apply, right? And you should still talk to the program and talk to an attorney, but it is going to be more difficult to qualify.
Thank you both for that. One other thing that I think is important that I have here in some of my notes is that once a writ, once the judge has said yes, you know, the marshals can come take your unit, essentially, right? Take the property back from you. Once a writ has been issued, a judge can only stay a case if a defendant proves that the ERAP application was approved and it will cover all arrears. So, and that's nuanced because, you know, if you have, like, let's say you're back $3,000 and ERAP only paid $2,500, but you got $500 some other way, the judge will only look at the ERAP thing. So, you know, it's just making it a lot more difficult for folks to stay housed. And I think that's the bigger issue here. You know, we would love to see this program funded at a higher level, but it's not the main issue is what we've been discussing so far, is that right now housing is just incredibly expensive for folks, and folks' incomes are not growing at the same rate that housing costs and every other cost are growing, right? So what we're seeing and hearing from folks is folks, you know, having to make some really tough decisions on what they do on a monthly basis, what they pay for. Do I, you know, my child may have had, you know, gotten sick or need something for their school, or my spouse, my family, you know, whatever, you know, those financial pressures that we all have in our lives pop up, you know, paying the rent becomes a lot more difficult. And what we're seeing, and you know, at least what we've been seeing for the past couple of months now, is that that impact that all of this is having on tenants is being erased, essentially, or is not being heard. The only people that are, you know, the victims or being painted as victims here are the poor landlords that are not getting their rents, right? So, Andrea, can you talk to us a little bit about the event that we are having? And we'll make sure to get the details again before we leave. But let's start off with the details. But, you know, what this event that we're having this coming Saturday hopes to do and why we believe it's important to do so.
Yeah, so as we've kind of been hinting at, decisions and narratives are being made about directly impacted tenants without directly impacted tenants. So we are going to have a tenant speak out. It's this Saturday, November 9th, 11 a.m. at the United Church of Christ. That's on 945 G Street Northwest. And at this event, we want tenants to just have a space to share their story around facing displacement, whether that's being impacted by the legislation and all the changes to ERAP that we were just talking about here, or whether that's other forms of displacement, such as being displaced because of unlivable housing conditions, or being exited from other housing programs that have experienced severe cuts, like rapid rehousing, that we know is happening at the same time as these big changes to ERAP. So we want to share those experiences. We also want to share experiences of tenant organizing, and we also want to capture the solutions that tenants want to address the affordable housing crisis. All of these things have been widely ignored. In fact, I'll just say briefly, like at a press conference that Phil Mendelson and the mayor had following the emergency legislation for ERAP, they even said that they have listened to DHS, they've listened to landlords, but they've made no mention of tenants whatsoever. Tenant voices need to be heard. So yes, we are having that tenant speak out. We need to speak out against displacement.
Here, anything to add?
I think just that if you want to come, you can register on our website, which is empowerdc.org /events. So yeah, register there. And we would love, yeah, we definitely want to get your story. Also say, just to add that we're really preparing for this hearing on next week, on November 15th. And that's when, so we've been mentioning this legislation that has changed how ERAP works. The council passed that as emergency legislation, which is part of how they didn't have to hear from any tenants, right? Because when you pass emergency legislation, there's no hearing. And so they're actually going to have a hearing next. It's November 15th at 9:30 a.m. And they'll be having a hearing on basically, it's the same legislation, but just a permanent version. So this is our opportunity to really come out and say, you know, how would this impact you? Maybe you've experienced, you've used ERAP, maybe you see the need for using ERAP. And yeah, how would it affect you as a resident? What are some changes that are needed? And like Andrea said, let's start uplifting, you know, the actual solutions that we need, right? So on our meeting Saturday, and then we'll also be having an opportunity the next Tuesday to prepare with people, we'll be doing, we'll be helping you all to prepare to give testimony at that city council hearing.
That's right. And we'll make sure to share our contact information before we wrap up. But yeah, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. We've got the meeting this Saturday to really begin to push back against this narrative, to say, wait a second, we've left out, you know, the most crucial voice in all of this, and where we can be more powerful, right? Or where we can build power by bringing people together and by sharing their stories and the impact and their ideas on how to solve some of these systemic issues that exist in this city. There's that hearing that is coming up, which will also be really important for us to turn out, because you better believe the other side has registered and is developing their testimony, and they're having their lawyers and policy advisors write them all up. So you better believe that side is getting ready. So we need to get ready. So we'll make sure to share our information so you can join some of our efforts on the pushback against this. Once again, folks, if you you are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., we are talking with Andrea Chapman and Farah Fosse. They both work at Empower DC and have been doing some really great work to make sure that a resident voice is centered around these issues that we've been talking about, but really painting a picture that tells the full story, not this program that, you know, is now underfunded, that it's being attacked, when the reality of what's happening in the city is not really being spoken of. So we really need to make sure that our stories are being heard, that the impact that these changes are being heard, because that's what will really lead to change. And of course, that we are getting organized and we're able to push and potentially deliver even some political consequences as we move through this work. So if you have any stories, any suggestions, anything to share related to the topic at hand here, the changing ERAP, but just in general, the high cost of living here in the district, please feel free to give us a call, 202-588-0893. Once again, that's 202-588-0893. And I think it's important to also share and underscore that, as Farah mentioned, this happened in an emergency. You know, on the cover of emergency, there was no hearing, and it was voted on unanimously, if I'm not mistaken. Everybody voted on it. Maybe, I don't know if Councilmember Gray voted, but the whole council voted to push this forward. So important. Mm-hmm. To
I think The only person who didn't, I think Councilmember Gray was not participating, but then other than of the, everyone else was there. And Councilmember Pinto stood aside. She abstained from voting. So everyone else voted for it. And from hearing her comments, her concerns were basically that some of the reforms, so, you know, of course, we participated in this working to make this emergency legislation as tenant friendly as possible, right? We worked as part of a coalition with legal service providers and other folks that work with renters in DC, and tried to make sure it was, as tenant friendly as possible in with a pretty bad bill, right? And so we got a couple amendments, and in particular got amendments making it clear that, you know, the judge could decide to extend the stay, as Andrea mentioned, right? They could continue a pause if ERAP funds are coming, if that ERAP application is pending. And Councilmember Pinto seemed really concerned that this would just lead to more delays and slow down the eviction process. And so I believe it sounded like she was abstaining because she wanted it to be, basically she wanted the eviction process to be faster. I'm sorry, I'm saying Pinto, and it was Councilmember Henderson.
Henderson.
Yes. Sorry about that. Councilmember Pinto actually had some good concerns. So correction, it was Councilmember Henderson who had those concerns and who stood aside from voting. Sorry about that, Councilmember Pinto.
Yeah, sorry for that. Thank you for clarifying that. Andrea, I know as we've been prepping for this event, you've been hearing from folks, and without, like, you know, without any spoilers, as they say, my kids love to say spoilers. Can you share with it just in general what you've been hearing from folks, like some of the concerns, and just because one thing that I like to, when we are in front of these council members and these decision makers, is just to say, like, do you realize the environment that you're creating, how hard you are making it for district residents who are already rent burdened, who are already financially burdened, to not see any sort of support, you know? And I think that's important for us to continue to push, but most importantly, from the voices of people actually experiencing it. Can you just share a little bit about what you've been hearing from folks as, you know, as you've been registering folks and interacting with folks in prep for this event?
Yeah, so one thing, of course, is the concern over when the portal is going to open, because of course, even though the DHS is in the process of making all of these administrative changes, people's eviction cases aren't slowing down. Of course, we're in an environment where we want to speed things up. So a lot of folks are concerned about the timeliness of the portal opening. Other things I'm hearing is that people have been going from program to program. So I mentioned a little bit earlier about rapid rehousing and how there's been cuts to that program. So I've been hearing that folks have been navigating, you know, rapid rehousing, been exited too quickly, and then are forced to turn to ERAP because they are still unable to pay their rent. And I think that really just shows that residents are being, exited from these programs and forced to deal with these rising costs on their own without any other mechanism or support in place to make sure that they are able to pay their rent in the future. So basically being set up to fail. And so that just leads to a constant cycle of going from program to program and then facing homelessness yet again. So I think that's extremely concerning. And one of the ways that all these housing programs really intersect, and why we've been kind of working in coalition with other legal service providers. Another thing that is very concerning and that I've been hearing from folks is the narrative piece. The fact that we have people like Mayor Bowser and Phil Mendelson saying these things, which really reminds me of the whole welfare, the dangerous narratives of the welfare queen, those dangerous narratives that really criminalize folks that are low income. there is concern of those narratives popping up again and making people having to compete for resources, which we know is not the case. We have more than enough money. And people, are just concerned that they're saying that they're using these things for slush funds when really people are still struggling to pay their rent and struggling to balance all those other costs. I mentioned earlier that I've talked to a lot of folks who are seeking to apply to ERAP, who have disabilities, who are seniors, and they're struggling to balance their medical costs, their food costs, and their housing costs, amongst other things. So there's a vast array of concerns there that are coming up.
I can add to another one that I think we've been hearing is that landlords aren't submitting their paperwork, and that the Department of House of Human Services is slow on their end. So, we've been talking about how there's this whole narrative of like tenants are, making all these problems for landlords. And this whole, what we've really seen is that everything's being put on tenants. This is all on tenants' back, right? All on the backs of folks who are low income, who are at risk of losing their housing, right? It's a very serious situation. And in order to get ERAP, it requires both information from the renter, but also from the landlord. And with the new reforms, they're really gonna be stricter about everything getting submitted within 45 days. So Andrea and I were talking to folks at this one building who said that their property manager, who had been fired, but before she was fired, they said she was just sitting on all these ERAP applications and hadn't submitted the paperwork, right? So this is gonna be a real problem if folks they could have their ERAP application closed, or they could be denied a stay because the landlord isn't submitting. And it was interesting in the hearing because I think it was particularly Council Member Trayon White was asking, what happens if the landlord doesn't submit their paperwork, or what happens if DHS is slow in processing the claim and processing the paperwork on their end. And Mendelson kept saying, well, their attorney can raise this in court. But the issue is, like, most tenants don't have attorneys in court. They have themselves, and it's a very antagonistic process when you're in landlord-tenant court. You're on the defensive as somebody who, didn't pay their rent, or is presumed to have not paid their rent, or had some other violation. And so you're going to have to be very proactive in speaking up and saying, I submitted everything, but the landlord didn't. And I think it's going to be a real challenge, and just doesn't really look at the reality of the situation, which is, there's two sides that need to submit paperwork. Landlords do benefit from this program, and they want to get the money. But we all know, right? People in the management office are not always responsive, particularly at certain properties, right? So they may not be submitting. And we know that DHS has been very slow at processing these applications, and we really didn't hear anything about how was DHS going to speed up their processes. Instead, it was all about what tenants needed to do.
That's right. Thank you. I'm going to ask Andrea to share the information about the event coming up this Saturday once again. But I did want to raise up, I think what's also been really absent of this conversation is the push has been to how do we make it easier to evict people? How do we return to the natural cycle of evictions, as I've heard it in some spaces? But there's not been a discussion of what happens to these evicted people. What happens to these district residents that will have to double up somewhere or end up literally on the streets? There's really been no discussion on what we're going to do in a city where the rents are too high. There's little to no protections now. And people will end up experiencing homelessness either short term or long term, but they're going to be experiencing it. That's without a doubt. And that conversation has been sorely missing from the folks making these emergency decisions to change these type of programs. So something important to note as we continue to engage in this fight. But Andrea, can you remind folks, please, once again, on the event that we're having this Saturday and how they can join us?
Yes. So the event we're having this Saturday is the Tenant Speak Out. It's going to be at 945 G Street Northwest. That is the United Church of Christ. And it's basically an opportunity for tenants to share their stories related to all of the things we've been discussing here today, related to displacement, experiencing eviction, navigating these housing programs. We want to hear those experiences. We also want to hear how folks have organized. We want to hear the solutions that tenants want. All of these things have largely been absent from the conversation. So we want to amplify those voices, and we are hoping that is a jumping off point for other actions to for folks to speak out against displacement. And I also just wanted to say that also underlying all of these issues is the fact that we're asking folks to pay for housing in deplorable conditions. How are landlords being held accountable for that as well? So if you are someone who is living in inhabitable conditions, if that is your story, please, please, please come out to the Speak Out as well. We need to hear your story. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for raising that up, Andrea, because that is certainly an issue that's plague this city, and you can argue, you know, many other cities, but, you know, definitely an issue that we've dealt here where people aren't getting their end of the bargain, right? You enter into a contract, I'm going to pay you this amount, and I'm going to have decent, habitable housing. And in many cases, that doesn't come to pass, but folks are being punished for not paying the rent. Farah, I know we've been having, just internally, we've been having some conversations around what else can be done? What can we do? Because obviously, right now, there's a disinvestment into the programs that protect people. But what other ways, you know, do you think this city or just in general folks can begin to be proactive about, you know, dealing with the rent just being too high and being unable to pay it?
Yeah, thanks. It's a lot, right? There's a lot of opportunities. I'll say there's a lot we could do, right? And a big one is that disinvestment piece. You know, as you said, Daniel, like the crux of this is like this program doesn't have enough funding, nor do the programs that people, you know, Andrea talked about that cycle of going between different programs, all of which are underfunded. So, you know, in the winter, we'll have oversight hearings for DC agencies, and then we go into the budget process. A budget is about a city's priorities, right? And the city just committed $515 million to the Capital One Arena. You know, they probably would say that's to bring more money into the city, but then where does that money go? We've had other sports deals, right? And we're still, you know, we don't have the money needed to keep people in DC, to keep people, you know, just living in decent conditions, right? So we really need to make it clear what DC residents want in the DC budget. So that means, you know, fully funding all of these programs that folks need. There may be some additional programs that I think, you know, that's definitely something we want to hear your thoughts on Saturday. Like, you know, what would work for you? What would help you to be able to avoid displacement in DC, to be able to live in good housing conditions? So I think the budget is really huge. The other piece I would say is organizing, organizing with your neighbors to get better housing conditions, to have a more responsive management and landlord, to preserve affordable housing if you live in an affordable property. So really like working together, you can have a lot of power with your neighbors. You can, you know, we go out and support folks to organize. There's other organizations that do that as well. And a big thing that we do work on is housing conditions. So definitely looking to, you know, to support folks who want to work together as a group to improve things at their properties.
That's right. No, thank you so much. So folks, as we begin to close this out, you know, the rents aren't getting any lower. And while this is really affecting low-income residents, you know, the problem is just getting out of hand. And so we really do need folks to support their neighbors and really just make sure that, you know, people are able to stay housed and that people aren't having to make these really tough decisions about where they put their hard-earned dollars. Because let's get away from this once again, this idea that people are just like sitting around, you know, depending on this, you know, government money that has, you know, it was there for a little bit. The federal money was there for a couple of months. They're making it seem like this was some long-term program that somehow changed the mindset of folks here into believing that the city will pay their rent. That's just not correct. And then, of course, ERAP has never been funded at the levels that it's been needed at. It's, you know, it's, we've seen better funding, but it's never that. So we really need to step up our advocacy and our organizing, as Farah mentions, to really make sure that we are saying, you know, something has to change, some real things have to change, and you need to listen to residents, to tenants of the district, who are unfortunately bearing the brunt of all of this. So I think repetition is important. So I'm going to ask Andrea one last time in sequence, if you would let folks know of all the kind of events that folks can plug in leading up to the hearing that's coming up on the 15th.
Yeah, so the major theme is speaking out against displacement, y'all. So on Saturday, November 9th at 11 a.m. on 945 G Street Northwest, that's the United Church of Christ, we will be having a tenant speak out where tenants can share their stories around facing displacement and the types of solutions that they want to address DC's affordable housing crisis. Again, that's November 9th, 11 a.m., 945 G Street Northwest. On November the 12th, that following Tuesday, we will be having a testimony power hour, and that is in preparation for the ERAP legislation, the permanent legislation that will permanently codify all of the recent changes to the ERAP program. So that's on November the 12th. That is to prep us for the hearing on November the 15th. So on November the 15th, the DC Council will be having a public hearing on the ERAP legislation. It's basically to make all of those changes that Farah mentioned earlier permanent. So please join us. Please share your testimony. And you can, I guess we're going to share our contact information so that folks can connect with us and take action. So the important dates are November the 9th, the 12th, and the 15th.
That's right. And just one last date to add to the date, Stu, here is in to be able to testify at this hearing, you have to register by the 13th. So if you are interested in registering and speaking at this upcoming council hearing, you would have to register by the 13th. You can go on the council's website and you go to hearings, and then you'll see HMS, you'll see the letters HMS, which is the hearing management system, and that'll take you to a calendar, and then you'll be able to find the date and register there. So please make sure to register. If you need any help in registering or have any questions on the discussion we've been having today, please feel free to call or email me. You can reach me at 202-731-8634. You can also email Daniel at empowerdc.org. Andrea, I don't know if you'd like to share your contact.
Certainly. So my phone number is 202-758-3978. That's 202-758-3978. And my email is Andrea, A-N-D-R-I-A, at empowerdc.org.
And I'll just add to, if you're interested in coming on Saturday, an easy way to register is to go to our website, empowerdc.org, and then go to the events page. And there's a little survey there you can click. That's great, because then you can let us know if you want to tell your story. And the good thing about registering is then you'll get reminders from us, and you'll get all that info right in a text or an email. So then you'll have it in your phone. What's the address, all of that. And just to keep the address in mind, it's just around the corner from the MLK Library, from the main library downtown.
That's right. I was going to remind folks about that. So thank you both, Andrea and Farah, so much for your time this afternoon and for sharing your knowledge and experience around this. Let's keep pushing, and we hope to see many folks come out this Saturday and engage in this fight to make sure that District residents are able to stay district residents. So we will catch you next Tuesday. Peace, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in, and once again, for all your support during this past drive.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Today is Election Day, and over 78 million people across the United States have already cast their ballots in early voting, but more are heading to the polls today to vote for their next president. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump each need at least 270 electoral votes to win. The battleground states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin are expected to be pivotal to the path to victory. Yesterday, both Harris and Trump campaigned in the key swing state of Pennsylvania. At her final rally in Philadelphia, Vice President Harris said, and I quote, "I am ready to offer that leadership as the next president of the United States. And this could be one of the closest races in history. Every single vote matters." End quote. Elsewhere, in Reading, Pennsylvania, former President Trump said, and I quote, "November 5th, 2024 will be Liberation Day in America. And on day one, I will launch the largest deportation program of criminals in American history." End quote. He added that he will invoke the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. And he called 1798 a year when the country was run a little tougher than it is today. With Election Day upon us, a number of Americans are experiencing what's called election stress or anxiety. Some are even landing in the hospital because of it. Recently, correspondents with the news agency Reuters spoke to more than 50 voters across the seven competitive states that will determine the next president. The voters had something in common. They were worried about how the country will look if their preferred candidate loses. They were worried that the other side will make trouble. And they were worried that the political divide will only grow deeper. To help combat Election Day stress, Dr. Joshua Stein, a psychiatrist from Minnesota, suggests taking in moments of calm from your local environment, like stepping outside to look at the leaves changing, walking your dog, or watching someone do art. He noted that your stress may be getting toxic when it affects how you eat, sleep, and take care of yourself or your family. The third time was a charm for Boeing, the world's largest aerospace company, as their workers agreed to a deal yesterday that will end their almost two-month strike. The acceptance of this deal brings an end to the costliest strike in the United States in more than 25 years. The deal that was agreed upon was the third attempt offered by Boeing, and the International Association of Machinists said that rank-and-file members voted by 59% to approve it. The deal calls for an immediate raise of 13% and raises of 9% for each of the next 2 years, and then another 7% in the fourth and final year of the contract. Altogether, members will receive a pay raise that exceeds 43%. Boeing CEO Kelly Ortberg said in a statement, and I quote, "We will only move forward by listening and working together. There is much work ahead and to return to the excellence that made Boeing an iconic company," end quote. The 33,000 union members will return to work starting tomorrow after having been on strike since September 13th. To the D.C. area, in preparation for Election Day results, heightened security measures are in place across the district, with increased patrols in key areas downtown and near the White House. During a news conference yesterday, D.C. Police Chief Pamela Smith said D.C. Police will also leverage its new helicopter, Falcon 1, and drones to monitor and protect critical areas during the election process. Smith said in no uncertain terms, and I quote, "There will be no tolerance for violence in our city, no destruction, or any unlawful behavior. We will hold all offenders accountable," end quote. In addition, there are several road closures and emergency no parking zones in place in view of Vice President Harris's watch party, which is taking place tonight at her alma mater, Howard University. In today's weather, it's currently about 76 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news.